Do you think she knew she didn't have a chance?
She had been kidnapped, sexually assaulted. I would guess that she thought that the end was near.
When you have a young woman abducted and brutalized in the manner she was, it scares people.
It was a helpless feeling. I prayed.
It's like a piece of my life that's missing, kind of a hole in my childhood.
The fact that a mother of four ends up being abducted and killed had to be shocking.
This kind of person is a deviant, vicious, Ted Bundy type.
He was at the mall same night that Nancy was.
He was drenched in sweat. He had blood on one hand and blood on his cheek.
What do you think provoked his attack on Nancy Menke?
That monster is in him. He's the type of person that I have nightmares about.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, and tonight we're on the case in Las Vegas, Nevada. The city, known for its 24-hour casinos and dazzling nightlife, became the backdrop for a heartbreaking mystery when a mother of four was found murdered in the front seat of her own car. As investigators began a desperate search for her killer, they never could have imagined how the key to cracking the case would ultimately be found. March 21st, 1984. It was a sunny Wednesday morning just before 8, when a few teenagers taking a shortcut to school stumbled upon a small blue car parked in the middle of a dusty path.
What did they find inside the car?
The first thing they saw was the body of a female on the passenger seat.
Terrified, the boys raced home to call police. Moments later, Officer Ken Hefner was dispatched to the shocking crime scene.
We're now in the general area of where the dispatch sent me. I went down to the vehicle, looked inside, saw our victim in the front passenger seat. There was a ligature around her neck. It was apparent that she was the victim of a homicide.
Officer Hefner radioed for backup and sealed off the crime scene. Homicide detectives arrived shortly after.
What did investigators see when they arrived on the scene?
Well, they saw a blue Honda with Nebraska plates and the body of a female who was laying prone on the seat of the car with her hands handcuffed behind the seat.
How old did investigators think she was?
Between late 30s to early 40s, somewhere in there. It was hard to tell because she had a great deal of blood around her head.
The victim had been savagely beaten, strangled, and shot multiple times at point-blank range.
She'd been shot in the face 6 times. We also noted that around her neck there was a pair of pantyhose.
Based on the condition of the woman's clothing, there was little doubt the gruesome crime had been sexually motivated.
The dress was ripped open and lifted above her waist, no panties on. She had no shoes on. One was found in the back seat. All of her personal things were there. Her purse was there. It had money in it. Robbery was not the motive.
What did investigators read into the viciousness of this murder?
That they're looking for somebody special. Somebody who is very dangerous.
Investigators were able to identify the victim from a driver's license found in the car. Her name was Nancy Menke. The 41-year-old mother of four had lived just 2 miles away.
The computer told us that she had been reported missing the night before at about 11 p.m.
As detectives continued to process the blue Honda, they found a shopping bag and a brand new pair of sneakers. The receipt indicated they had been bought the night before at a nearby mall. The timestamp of 6:39 p.m. helped narrow down the time frame of the murder.
6:39 is the last time we can pinpoint her position. That's when we lose track of her.
Police believe that Nancy had been attacked shortly after buying the sneakers.
What were some of the initial theories about what had happened to Nancy Menke?
She had been kidnapped, sexually assaulted, murdered. That much they knew. The theories as to how that happened were non-existent.
What evidence were investigators able to collect?
The handcuffs, spent bullets, spent cartridges, the shoes and the seat.
Investigators knew then that their next step was notifying Nancy Menke's family about the heartbreaking crime.
My partner Al Levitt and Lieutenant John Connor personally went to the Menke residence.
As officers approached the Menke's home armed with the worst possible news, they had to consider the possibility that there was someone inside who had a motive for the murder. One-year-old Nancy Menke had been found handcuffed, beaten, and shot to death in the passenger seat of her car. Now, as Las Vegas Metro Police began the hunt for her killer, they also had to break the devastating news to her family. When police arrived at Norman Menke's front door, they had to inform the Air Force Lieutenant Colonel about his wife's horrifying murder.
What did the police share with you?
Well, they found her in her car, deceased. I don't think they really gave me a lot of detail.
While Norman tried to process the crushing blow of the loss of his wife, officers had to consider a disturbing possibility.
In every case, the husband is always the first suspect.
But Norman's emotional reaction and airtight alibi allowed him to be quickly eliminated.
Early on, they recognized that this man could have nothing to do with his wife's death.
Once police had cleared Norman, he became a valuable resource to investigators. In particular, he played a crucial role in establishing Nancy's last known whereabouts.
What time did you expect Nancy home that day?
She was working 9 o'clock in the morning till 6 at the time. She stopped at a mall to get tennis shoes.
At what point did you begin to worry?
Once we got done with dinner, I started getting concerned. So I drove up to the mall to check to see whether her car was there, and it wasn't there. And I kind of traced back the route she might take home.
When Lieutenant Colonel Menke found no sign of his wife or her car, he called all of the area hospitals to see if she had been in an accident. Then, around 11 p.m., he called the Las Vegas Metro Police to report Nancy missing.
What did they tell you?
We had to wait 48 hours, something like that.
How did that make you feel?
Helpless. Helpless. You know, I'm a Air Force Lieutenant Colonel. Got to make things happen. So it was a helpless feeling.
Lieutenant Colonel Menke spent a long, painful night sitting by the phone waiting for news about his wife. And now, just hours later, he was trying to find the right words to tell his four children that their mother was dead.
I prayed. And I felt her spirit leave. She was a Christian lady. I knew where she was going to be. But the kids didn't have a mother.
Losing Nancy was incredibly difficult for Norman, but it was even harder on their four children. John Menke was just 5 years old when his mother was murdered.
It's like a piece of my life that's missing. Kind of a hole in my childhood.
I was 20 when it happened. And you know, you're already to that point where you're trying to be your own person. It was a difficult time.
Since Norman was often away on assignment with the Air Force, Nancy had spent months at a time taking care of their children on her own.
What kind of a mother was she?
She was a multifaceted individual. She was an intelligent woman. She was an advocate. She was a friend.
She ran the household and kept everyone in line. Very poised and beautiful and strong.
Nancy also had a career. She was a top salesperson at Saks Fifth Avenue and had just been selected to start management training. Investigators wondered if Nancy could have been the victim of a jealous coworker.
Did Nancy have any enemies?
None that I found. Everyone loved her.
With no suspect in her inner circle, police became convinced that Nancy had been kidnapped by a stranger. And a theory about when and where it had happened quickly came into focus.
What was the timeline that police created for the last moments of Nancy's life?
She had worked all day at Saks Fifth Avenue. She left about 6:15. She went to the Boulevard Mall. Purchased a pair of tennis shoes.
We know by the receipt, 6:39 p.m. is the last time that she's seen alive.
And a canvas of the neighborhood near the crime scene revealed the witness who helped pinpoint when she died.
There was a woman who was watching television in her house, and she heard what she thought were 5 to 6 shots around 7:30.
Investigators concluded that Nancy had been abducted, sexually assaulted, and murdered between 6:40 and 7:30.
That 1 hour that he had her just had to be the most horrendous hour that you can imagine.
Detectives believe that Nancy had been taken to the crime scene in her own car. And that meant her killer had fled the area on foot.
The major case squad did a grid search of every inch, literally on hands and knees, just followed footprints. And his footprints led right up to the intersection.
But there were no clues of where the killer went next. At this point, it seemed that he had simply vanished without a trace. Las Vegas Metro Police had narrowed down the time frame of the kidnapping and murder of Nancy Menke to a single terrifying hour. They believe that after the mother of four left a local mall just after 6:30 that night, she was abducted and driven to a secluded area where she was raped, beaten, and shot to death around 7:30. Investigators followed a set of footprints discovered at the crime scene back to a busy intersection. But that's where the killer's trail ended. Now, with no solid leads on a suspect, police turned to the public, hoping someone had seen something that could help them find Nancy's killer. Investigators reached out to the media, releasing pictures of Nancy, her car, and her missing shoe.
A day or so after the murder, we discovered that one of her shoes were missing. We made a press release and put it in the news.
They asked that anyone with information contact the Las Vegas Metro Police Department. The publicity generated a wave of outrage and fear that swept across the community.
The fact that a mother of four, who was simply on her way home from work, ends up being abducted and killed had to be shocking.
People familiar with all the facts of the case, we were all very shocked at this. And it was because of Nancy and her innocence.
When you have a young woman abducted and brutalized in the manner she was, it scares people. These are people that everybody in that community can identify with. Every husband can say, my hell, that could be my wife. So you get a lot of cooperation.
More than 300 tips poured in. One caller described a woman's shoe she had seen lying in the roadway.
A local resident had seen the shoe and described it as being in the gutter here. Sure enough, we got out here, it was still here, and it was a match for the victim's shoe, so it was recovered and impounded.
But how had Nancy's shoe gotten there? It was almost a mile and a half away from the crime scene. Police had no answers. And while different theories about the shoe were considered, investigators received another valuable lead.
A woman called in and said that she and her son had been driving, and a blue Honda with Nebraska plates sped by them at a very high rate of speed.
That sighting had occurred just a few blocks from the area where Nancy's car had been discovered.
Did police believe that witness had actually seen the kidnapping in progress?
Absolutely. There were probably a lot of blue Hondas running around Las Vegas at that time, but not too many with Nebraska plates.
In fact, detectives knew it was unlikely there were more than a handful of cars that matched that description.
Why did your car have Nebraska plates on it?
Well, that was a practice. A lot of Air Force people, they kept their plates from your home state.
The witness had seen a white male with dark hair in the driver's seat who appeared to be alone. But if Nancy had been handcuffed in the fully reclined passenger seat, it would have been impossible for the witness to have seen her.
Can you imagine this poor woman being driven in her own car with her hands handcuffed behind her?
Do you think she knew she didn't have a chance?
I would guess that she thought that the end was near.
The witness said that the man driving the car made a left turn and drove out of sight in the direction of the crime scene. When detectives pieced together everything they knew about the case, a hazy profile of the killer emerged. He was a white male who had access to handcuffs. Based on the shell casings found at the crime scene, they were certain he had used a .25 caliber handgun. Investigators undertook a massive search for the murder weapon, including contacting every pawn shop in the city.
And remarkably, they discovered a pistol that appeared to be a match.
So we went to that pawn shop, and they just sent it to us immediately.
And the discovery looked even more promising when detectives learned that the man who pawned the pistol was a white male security guard who worked near the mall. A background check revealed that the man also had a criminal history. Police hoped that ballistic testing would link the weapon to Nancy's murder. But the results were not what investigators had hoped.
We took it to the lab to be processed. It turned out not to be the weapon. Once we cleared the weapon, it pretty much cleared the person who pawned it.
Detectives were back to square one, and time marched on. Weeks turned into months. And as police continued to chase down leads, Norman Menke was adjusting to being a single father, trying to put on a brave face for his four children.
How much did you struggle?
Probably more than I realized. Of course, my first priority was the kids.
What was the most challenging part of adapting to your new life as a single parent?
Never having a moment without something you had to do. Up in the morning, feed them, get them dressed, go to work. But you're dealt the cards and you play them. And what's past is past, and you can't change it.
John Menke was just a boy during those difficult days. But he will never forget how his father kept the family together.
He was incredibly strong because he kept on and he provided for his kids. And he gave us everything that he had.
While the unsolved murder of his wife severely tested the Lieutenant Colonel's deepest reserves of strength and courage, detectives continued to soldier on as well. They wanted nothing more than to give Norman and his family some answers that might allow their healing to begin. But their relentless efforts had not generated a single new lead.
What was the point where investigators felt that the case was going stone cold on them?
After the woman who saw the car racing by her, nothing more happened. Nobody was calling in. They couldn't create any more leads to follow. They just had to wait for something to happen.
And while police waited for the clue that might jumpstart the case, they were facing a disturbing question. If Nancy's killer wasn't caught soon, would he soon be taking the life of another innocent victim? Detectives trying to solve the murder of Nancy Menke had received two promising tips from the public. One caller reported finding Nancy's missing shoe on the side of the road, while the other had actually seen Nancy's blue Honda racing toward the crime scene with a white male behind the wheel. But after months of investigation, those leads had gone nowhere, and police now had to face the disturbing reality that the case was cold. Desperate for a lead, Detective Dave Hatch contacted the FBI to see if agents there could create a profile of Nancy Menke's killer. The report they generated only added to the veteran investigators' darkest fears.
Their profile came back and said, this guy's a deviant. This is something that he's fantasized about until he finally did it. You've got a Ted Bundy type person.
And there were more disturbing details. The report stated that the killer the detective was searching for was young possibly even a teenager. And by now, he was likely planning his next murder.
They said they're very paranoid, thinking that they might get caught. And then when they think they're going to get away with it, then they'll do it again. We checked every registered sex offender in that entire area. The major case people literally checked out every one of them.
But none of them was Nancy Menke's killer. Detectives had chased down every lead when they got a tip from the last place they would have expected.
Investigators finally got the break they were looking for. What was it?
It was compliments of Connie Thatcher. Connie Thatcher worked in the crime analysis unit.
Connie Thatcher was a records clerk who studied police reports, looking for claims that might be linked to insurance fraud. And among the thousands of police reports Connie had to read, one caught her attention. It documented the kidnapping of a young man from the same mall where Nancy Menke had been last seen.
He had gone to the Sears and he came out, and two black males accosted him. One had a stick. They put him in his own car, told him to drive.
He said two black guys took him, drove him somewhere in the desert, and let him go.
The young man said after surviving the attack, he ran to a neighbor's house for help. When he got there, his face was smeared with blood.
They had bats and they must have hit him.
Connie's instincts told her there was something odd about this story. She had followed the Nancy Menke murder investigation closely, and several of the details of the young man's account seemed too coincidental.
She was found in the desert, in her car, all tied up and shot and killed. And I just thought he was kidnapped from the mall and let out in a real close area to where she was.
Connie looked up the date of Nancy's murder and couldn't believe what she was seeing.
He was at the mall same night that Nancy was.
Connie was convinced there was a connection between the alleged kidnapping and Nancy's murder. And she continued to investigate on her own.
What did she find out?
She saw in that police report that his address was remarkably close to the crime scene.
Connie's discoveries raised a chilling question. Could the young man who filed the kidnapping report actually have been Nancy's killer?
His neighbor discovered him walking down the street all bloody, and I think he made up the story that he was kidnapped and beat up.
Connie dug deeper. She knew that Nancy Menke had been killed with a .25 caliber handgun. So she did some more research.
She went to the gun registrations to see if anybody in the household had a .25 caliber registered to them.
Connie Thatcher was stunned when she read the records. The teenager's mother owned a .25 caliber pistol. She raced up the stairs to the Homicide Bureau to show Detective Hatch what she had found.
I told him, I said, you know, this is really strange. And I just said, go check it out, you know, just see if it's anything.
And when Detective Hatch studied the information Connie provided, he wondered if she had just handed him the key to cracking the case. Connie Thatcher, a records clerk for the Las Vegas Metro Police Department, had just discovered a report that dramatically advanced the investigation into the murder of Nancy Menke. A young man had called police the night Nancy disappeared, claiming he had been abducted and beaten in nearly the identical location where Nancy's lifeless body was ultimately found. And when Connie dug deeper, she found another incriminating clue. The new suspect had access to a .25 caliber pistol, which was the same type of gun that killed Nancy Menke. Connie Thatcher's research had her convinced that the kidnapping story was an elaborate cover-up by a 16-year-old named Scott Sloan.
You know how you have this gut feeling? I just felt he was lying, and I didn't believe it, so I told the detectives. And it was really neat that they listened to me.
In fact, Las Vegas detectives did a lot more than just listen. They focused their investigation on the teenager.
So what happened when officers bore in on him?
They asked him what happened that night. He gave essentially the same kidnap story.
Sloan told the detectives that after his kidnappers allowed him to go free, he ran to the home of a neighbor for help. Investigators decided to talk with the woman to see what she remembered about Scott Sloan's visit that night. The neighbor said Sloan was sweating and terrified when he arrived on her doorstep.
She invited him in the house, and she said, "My God, Scotty, what has happened to you?"
Sloan's neighbor told police she was confused by the blood she saw on the teenager.
Did he have any injuries?
No. That's the interesting part. She said, "Scotty, you've got blood on your hand and on your cheek." He looked in the mirror, and he's wiping the blood off.
Sloan told the woman he didn't want to report the attack, but his neighbor insisted that he notify the police.
They go over to Mom's. Mom calls the police. The police officer comes and takes the kidnap report.
Investigators believe that Scott Sloan was now a prime suspect in Nancy Menke's murder, but they didn't reveal that theory. And when the teenager and his mother arrived at the station for a follow-up interview, Detective Hatch casually asked Sloan's mother if he could do a ballistics exam on her pistol. Hatch was stunned when she quickly agreed.
We thought, wow, I mean, we figured we'd have to get a search warrant to get it.
So did it appear to police that she really didn't believe her son had anything to do with the murder?
Yes, she believed that he didn't do it.
While police continued to go over the details of Sloan's story with the teenager and his mother, the crime lab finished its testing of the pistol.
What were the results of his testing?
Perfect match.
The firearms ballistic expert said, "This is your gun." I said, "How sure are you?" And he said, "It's absolutely that weapon, 100%. I jumped up and ran the full length of the office. I was so excited.
The ballistics match was the physical evidence police needed to seal the case. Scott Sloan was arrested for first-degree murder. Detectives immediately contacted Norman Menke with the news.
What was your reaction when you heard that police believed that a 16-year-old kid killed Nancy?
Yeah, I was relieved that they'd found him. At the same time, that was a shock. 16-year-old kid. It would be a surprise to anybody.
While Sloan was behind bars awaiting trial, investigators continued to build their case. Detectives found out that the handcuffs used to bind Nancy Menke's wrists had been stolen from an employee who worked at a grocery store with Sloan.
The handcuffs had belonged to the manager of a local grocery store.
had Scott Sloan work for him.
He was Mock's boy.
Police recovered the two pairs of handcuffs the manager had bought and compared them to the one found at the crime scene. They were identical.
We're able to do the serial numbers. The manager had bought three pairs of Smith & Wesson cuffs, and they were in sequential order because he bought them together.
Despite the powerful case Dan Seaton had compiled, he was still concerned that a jury might have a hard time believing that Scott Sloan had committed the sadistic crime.
What was your fear?
They would not follow the evidence. He was a young, skinny, nice-looking kid. Just doesn't make sense for him to be the killer.
Walk me through the strongest evidence you thought you had against him.
Well, start at the top, handcuffs and bullets. That alone was enough to convict him. His many lies. His kidnap report happened to come out of the same mall at the same time as the murder.
What do you think his rationale was for making up this story?
To create an alibi, to show that he was someplace else so he couldn't have done it.
But that plan backfired on Scott Sloan when Connie Thatcher uncovered the inconsistencies in his report. At the conclusion of the emotional trial, the jury took just 17 hours to find him guilty of kidnapping, sexual assault, and first-degree murder. For investigators, it was a relief to finally put such a brutal case to rest.
What do you think provoked his attack on Nancy Menke?
I think he wanted to have sex very badly that night and figured the only way to get it was to force it. He carried handcuffs. He carried a pistol with him, so he was well prepared. And once it came upon him what he had done, he had to get rid of the only witness against him.
Do you think what happened to Nancy was simply just being in the wrong place at the wrong time?
Yeah. Yeah. It could have been somebody else.
To this day, law enforcement isn't certain exactly how the deadly attack unfolded, but they are sure that sometime after Nancy left the Boulevard Mall, Sloan abducted her, handcuffed her to the passenger seat of her car, and drove her to a remote location. Then, after a brutal assault, he shot her to death with his mother's pistol.
It was really shocking and sad. Just hard to wrap my mind around. It was hard to imagine what it was like for her.
...16-year-old Scott Sloan was sentenced to life with the possibility of parole. Investigators believe that even now, more than three decades later, he remains a danger to society.
Scott Sloan, even at his age now, that monster in him is in him. He's the type of person that I have nightmares about.
And detectives are certain that if Sloan hadn't been caught, he would have killed again. Nancy's family hopes that the dangerous killer never has the chance to prove police right.
Do you focus on those times where he's come up for parole?
No. No. The hands of justice takes hold, and hopefully it does what it's supposed to do.
Although much of their pain remains as fresh today as it was at the time of the murder,
The Mankey family remains grateful for the unlikely heroes who helped investigators bring Nancy's killer to justice. In particular, Scott Sloan's neighbor and records clerk Connie Thatcher.
Without those two women stepping up and doing what others were unable to do, there might be other bodies that would be in the ground because of him. And I think both of those women are to be applauded in what they've done.
How did you find the strength to work through your grief?
Life isn't always easy. One of the things I think that is a tragedy in the families of victims is that they don't let go of the hurt, and it eats them up. Scott Sloan may have taken my mother, but he didn't take me. I'm not going to let him do that. I go on living.
You can't change it. You can let it sink you. Don't dwell on the bad part of it, because it's only going to drag you down and keep you from going forward.
After his conviction, Scott Sloan reached out to the Rocky Mountain Innocence Center to fight for DNA testing to clear his name. The results of those tests had the opposite effect. It revealed that Sloan's DNA was a near perfect match to the evidence police had recovered. I'm Paula Zahn. Please join us next time when we're back on the case.